Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program number 732, Dead Man's Chest, Wiki Fascism and the Attack of the Cyber Vondervogel. This program is being recorded on January 9th of the year 2011. We're going to plunge right back in due to the limitations of time where we left off on Side 1. We've been talking about this is a very tall glass to drink at one sitting, but even by For the Record standards. But we've been talking about WikiLeaks, its relationship with what I call the pirate vortex, not only the pirate downloading, the pirate file sharing site, file sharing site Pirate Bay, but the associated international political parties, the pirate parties, and also the international associated online hacker slash computer milieu, Anonymous. These are all overlapping and associated. We've been taking a look at that and the Nazi or Fascist International, as I call it, one of its financial luminaries, a guy named Carl Lundstrom operating out of Sweden. And we're going to plunge right back into the discussion. Now, when we left off at Side 1, we were talking about the possible motivations for somebody like Carl Lundstrom to get involved with a milieu that's basically a sort of anarcho-utopian file-sharing, anti-corporate, let's break all the bonds and the freedom will flower all over the world kind of thing. And again, I'm not being as cynical as it probably is, as sarcastic as that sounds, but why would you have somebody like Carl Lundstrom involved with a milieu like that? Well, that's one of the questions I'm asking. We've already taken a look at the fact that it would permit the Nazi International, and probably has permitted them, to access all of the information sent to WikiLeaks, and that would be tremendously useful for them. Also, the BitTorrent protocol would be very useful for online sharing of music. And in the aforementioned For the Record series, German Corporate Control of American Media, we took a look at Bertelsmann and its forays into publishing and music. And in For the Record program number 695, Dancing Machine, we took a look at Michael Jackson and his death, and we examined some indications of foul play and some indications of some real foul elements around Michael Jackson, and also the fact that one of the things that made his demise potentially very lucrative was the fact that he owned an awful lot of the rights to Beatles music. Right at the time of Michael Jackson's death, Bertelsmann, which had sashayed out of the music business for a while, sashayed right back in, being bankrolled by Kohlberg Kravis Roberts to engage in music licensing. And one of the lines of speculation was that they were going to go for the Beatles songs, that the rights to which were jointly owned by Sony and the, at that point, late Michael Jackson. Just so happens that the two big stories in the music business that week were the death of Michael Jackson and, ta-da, the purchase of Pirate Bay by GGF, okay? And what I'm asking, with Bertelsmann looming large in the one situation and with Carl Lundstrom in the other, whether this was part of the same serpent's walk of underground Reich corporate gaining of corporate control over various media. Noting the following. There have been two big music business news stories in the past week. One has been and still is dominating all media outlets, and the other pretty much snuck in under the radar. The biggest story, of course, was the death of Michael Jackson and the resulting cancellation of his 50 gigs at the O2. And the other was the report. There are reports that subscribers are closing their accounts and a global gaming factory is facing an insider trading investigation after its stock saw a huge upswing in trades on Monday, the day before the deal was announced. So the two big stories in the media business that week, and by the way, this is from The Guardian of July 3rd of 2009, behind the music, Pirate Bay's purchase proves they're not altruistic. And again, the purchase of Pirate Bay by Global Gaming Factory was going to be done in considerable measure with GGF stock. There was a huge run-up in that, 170% increase in their stock the day before the deal was announced. They now are apparently facing bankruptcy, so it remains to be seen exactly who will wind up with Pirate Bay, but again, or with the technology of Pirate Bay. But again, note the corporate maneuvering over this, and even more, again, note how the realities of Pirate Bay are not only fundamentally different from the sort of anarcho-utopian ideals of the people who use it and the people in the Pirate Bay Pirate Party anonymous milieu, but it, even beyond that, it turns out that although people like Carl Lundstrom have underwritten the operations of Pirate Bay, that actually the owner is a shell holding company that was incorporated in the Seychelles Islands, which brings us right back to the murky world of offshore corporations that we've looked at in our conversations with Lucy Commissar, and also the sort of corporate fronts that various corporations use for malfeasance, from Enron to the various fronts put up by the Borman Capital Network. Let's take a look at what really lies behind Pirate Bay. And the following, by the way, the full URL for this will be in the description for the Record 732. This is from online. This is from Project Archive, October 28, 2009. Fresh Pirate Bay purchase attempt by four potential buyers. Now listen who actually controls Pirate Bay. Earlier this year, the shareholders of Global Gaming Factory agreed to acquire the world's largest BitTorrent tracker. All the company had to do was to come up with $7.8 million, or SEK 60 million, half of which to be paid in shares. As anonymous investors pulled out and promises from the shareholders that they would come up with the funds themselves came up to nothing, the deadline for the sale passed and the site stayed in the hands of Reservella, the Seychelles-based holding company that acquired the Pirate Bay 2 years ago. But for those missing the optimistic press releases, bold statements and dramas of the attempted purchase by GGF today brings good news. According to a report, Reservella, with a helping hand from ex-Pirate Bay spokesman Peter Sunday, are in fresh talks with four potential buyers. So a couple of years ago, Pirate Bay was nominally sold to a holding company incorporated in the Seychelles Islands, probably to prevent it from being seized or utilized. So once we begin digging into Pirate Bay, we're right back with, again, the world of murky offshore corporate fronts, Enron, the Borman Network, the exact antithesis of the very types of things that the Pirate Bay users, the Pirate Party anonymous folks think they're getting involved with. Hence, my use of the comparison with the Vondervogel. And as we take a look at Carl Lundstrom, it begins to become even clearer just exactly where he's at. One of the things that Carl Lundstrom was suggesting, and this may have been one of the things that prompted the sale of Pirate Bay to a Seychelles Islands Incorporated holding company, and one of the things, according to a report, what Carl Lundstrom was suggesting to the other Pirate Bay owners was that they move the operation to Argentina. Well, that, I think, to knowledgeable listeners, veteran listeners, that pretty much speaks for itself. From the GIGAOM, of the full reference will be, this is a Scandinavian publication, from Janko Rutgers, who is the fourth man in the Pirate Bay case? Actually, it might come from the Netherlands, from February 2nd of 2008. The paper also talks about knowledge on Lundstrom's side about potential legal ramifications. Again, maybe that's what prompted the sale to the holding company in the, incorporated in the Seychelles. Prosecutors say Lundstrom personally sent an SMS to Frederick Nage on May 31st of 2006 to warn him about the raids against the Pirate Bay and its owners. Lundstrom supposedly also suggested in an email to move the Pirate Bay's operations to Argentina. Well, that obviously is one of the major epicenters of the Nazi diaspora, post-war diaspora, both personnel and capital. And again, it exactly who it is. Pirate Bay sold a Swedish IT company from the Swedish Wire. It's still unclear who actually are the owners of the Pirate Bay. There's no company with the name Pirate Bay registered in Sweden. According to GGF's legal advisor, Per-Erik Alvsing, the Pirate Bay is owned by a company in the Seychelles called Reservella, Dagens Industri writes, but he doesn't know who's the owner of Reservela. Again, it sounds just like the corporate fronts we've examined with Lucy Commissar. Think Enron, think Borman Network. So at the epicenter of the anarcho-utopian Pirate Bay, Pirate Party milieu is something very, very different. Corporatist indeed. We're going to take a look, too, at a Swedish blog here, and I'm going to do the best I can with the publications. But we're going to take a look at some more of Carl Lundstrom's political sympathies, and then we're going to come back to this. Lundstrom has made no secret of his sympathy for the xenophobic groups, and last year his name was linked with the customer code of the Nazi publishing house, Nordic Publishers. Basically, he was one of the customers of a Nazi publishing house, Nordic Publishers. Lundstrom replied, "I support them by buying books and music. You and the media just want to spread contempt for different people. You and the media are full of hatred for the Pirate Bay," concludes a very upset Carl Lundstrom. And it goes on to continue, "Nordic Publishing Company sells white power music and books that celebrate racist violence. That publisher supports the Nazi demonstration in Salem and invited the Ku Klux Klan leader for a lecture tour in Sweden." That Ku Klux Klan leader is David Duke. But we're going to come back to this in just a second. Remember the name Nordiska Forlaget, or Nordic Publishers. We're going to come back to that in just a second. But I want to take a note again of just how deeply involved the pirate nexus or the pirate vortex. Again, Pirate Bay, the associated international pirate parties, Anonymous, 4chan, etc., are with the operations of WikiLeaks. And again, we took a look at the fact that Pirate Bay helped to provide WikiLeaks with their operations in Sweden. The Pirate Party has also assisted their actual physical plant in Sweden by helping to provide them with a former underground nuclear shelter for an operating center. By the way, one of the articles about this particular underground nuclear bunker noted that a lot of people have looked at Julian Assange and have thought maybe he would have been appropriate as a science fiction character, like somebody from a 50s sci-fi movie, or maybe the old Outer Limits TV series, or perhaps he would have made a very good James Bond villain. They were noting this particular underground nuclear bunker. It really does have a distinctly Bondish atmosphere to it, even out to the point where the power plant for this underground nuclear bunker, where WikiLeaks operations are housed now in part, is provided by a couple of diesel engines from a World War II German U-boat. And then it is, as some wags have noted, it really is very Bondish. I guess I want to say Bondish and disciplined under the circumstances. But again, want to note the extent to which the pirate vortex is involved with WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks, now hosted from an underground nuclear bunker by Martin Bryant in thenextweb.com from August 30th of this year. One of the world's most controversial websites now has one of the world's coolest data centers. Andy Greenberg at Forbes has picked up a Norwegian report that WikiLeaks servers are now hosted in Sweden's Pionen data center, housed inside a Cold War-era underground nuclear bunker 30 meters below Stockholm. It reportedly has a single entrance with a half-meter-thick metal doors. The move has been initiated by the Swedish Pirate Party, who began looking after WikiLeaks hosting this month. And it goes on to have some statements. It says here, "We have long admired WikiLeaks," the Pirate Party's Rick Falvina told Norway's VG, claiming that as his party is hosting WikiLeaks, an attack on WikiLeaks is also regarded as an attack on a political party. Then, after WikiLeaks was subjected to some denial-of-service attacks, the Swiss Pirate Party undertook to access some of WikiLeaks' material. The following is from the Vancouver Sun. "On Friday, the Pirate Party of Switzerland, part of an international movement fighting for the free sharing of online content, said it owned the WikiLeaks.ch domain name and was happy to support WikiLeaks. I don't see an opportunity for a foreign government to reach into Switzerland," said Lenars. "This is a very forward-looking move." And beyond that, when their various funding conduits began to dry up, the one of the founders of Pirate Bay, Peter Sunday, basically helped, had a startup company that was used as a conduit for funds for WikiLeaks. So one of the people who founds Pirate Bay has a startup company that is being used as a financial conduit for WikiLeaks when things like PayPal, MasterCard, and others have begun going south. And the following is from WikiLeaks, WikiLeaks still funded by Pirate Bay founder startup from WebNewser by Kenneth Musanti, December 9th of 2010. While major online financing services such as PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa have shut down their dealings with the embattled WikiLeaks, one microfinancing startup is still hanging on. Flatter, a micropayment startup created by Peter Sunday, co-founder of the infamous BitTorrent sharing site The Pirate Bay, still accepts donations on behalf of the document-leaking nonprofit. Sunday has been a public advocate for Assange and WikiLeaks. He has also proposed a peer-to-peer DNS system that would prevent domain name registrations from being revoked, as was done with the WikiLeaks.org domain. And again, after this began to happen, there were a number of denial of service attacks and others on some of the various companies, such as PayPal and others, that had stopped channeling funds for WikiLeaks. After this, there was a campaign, basically, is a denial of service and hacking campaign against many of these companies that was conducted by the anonymous milieu. Now, again, anonymous and the 4chan group are, they're anonymous, of course. They're loosely affiliated with Pirate Bay, and I'll have some links in the description for the program documenting that. The logo for Operation Payback is obviously very closely derivative from the Pirate Bay logo, which has a what appears to be a tape cassette on the sails of a traditional old, you know, maybe 17th or 18th century pirate ship. And Operation Payback has the same thing, except that they're firing a gun. And Operation Payback, Anonymous, the Pirate Party slash Pirate Bay milieu are, if not coterminous, certainly very heavily overlapped. And again, that's why I refer to the whole Pirate Bay situation as a vortex, at the epicenter of which is Carl Lundstrom. Of Operation Payback, done by the same pirate milieu or pirate vortex. The hacker-friendly website 4chan has begun to organize its members, known collectively as Anonymous, in an effort to prevent the oppressive future, quote, the oppressive future which looms ahead, unquote. The Operation Avenge Assange will consist of a series of internet attacks that have begun with PayPal. And then it goes to talk about Julian Assange and who he is. One of the more potentially powerful groups to throw in its support for Assange is the website 4chan and some of its members that are collectively known as Anonymous. The group that is either famous or infamous, depending on your point of view, have begun a new campaign to support WikiLeaks and its creator that they are calling Operation Avenge Assange. Operation Avenge Assange is a systematic attack that will target groups that Anonymous has deemed to be essentially treated to have essentially treated Assange unfairly. The first target on the list is PayPal, which reports that cyber attacks have already begun. So the point that I'm making here is that that WikiLeaks operations from the original servers and bandwidth provided by Rickstrom and PRQ down to their various physical hosting situations, down to the group that's avenging their attacks, they are inextricably linked with the Pirate Vortex. One of Peter Sunday's Pirate Bay funders startups is handling their financing. One cannot really separate this Pirate Vortex from WikiLeaks. But also note very quickly, and there's going to be at least one more show about WikiLeaks, certainly no one familiar with this program could possibly come away from it not realizing there's no love lost between yours truly and big corporations. However, the fact of the matter is if you're doing a business operation, large or small, and if there are indications that somebody with whom you're potentially doing business or have been are doing something wrong, you should have the right to not do business with them, aside from anything having to do with the U.S. government. The fact of the matter is there are very serious questions about WikiLeaks finances, and those come not from the U.S. government, Carbon, but from people like the Wau Holland Foundation in Germany, which was helping to channel foundations to WikiLeaks, and they were noting some serious anomalies vis-a-vis WikiLeaks finances. So was John Young. That's one of the reasons he quit the group. He said flat out that their insistence on getting lots of money doesn't make sense and is not necessary. So there's some very legitimate questions about their finances, but again noting that fascism would be the last thing from the minds of the pirate slash anonymous people, yet when you are using technology, it permits a small number of people to impose their political will on others. And that potentially is of great use to any sort of a fascist entity, or any person seeking totalitarian control, whether from the left or the right, or of a monarchist. After Julian Assange's latest downloading of State Department documents, of course, he has been charged with two counts of rape in Sweden. I want to note simply in passing that Sweden's rape laws are somewhat different from ours. The internet was then abuzz with an allegation that the women were actually being manipulated by the CIA and that they were part of CIA-controlled anti-Castro Cuban organizations. Aside from the analysis of the anti-Castro Cuban milieu, which is overtly fascist, what is interesting is the source for the allegation that basically was attempting to discredit Julian Assange's accusers by linking them with the CIA. That comes specifically from Alexander Colburn's Counterpunch newsletter, or its main citation is the Counterpunch newsletter of Alexander Colburn, and there's an article that he published on September 14th of 2010, Assange Besieged by Israel Shamir and Paul Bennett. And again, that's from Counterpunch. And this is the source for the alleged CIA background and manipulation of Julian Assange's accusers. But what is so interesting is that Israel Shamir is not the real name for that fellow. He actually is a guy named Joran Jermas, was born in Russia, and now operates in conjunction with a Swedish Nazi and anti-Semitic milieu. From the British anti-fascist publication The Searchlight from May of 2004, Torbox, Sven Johansson, and Lisa Offerblom, Israeli writer is Swedish anti-Semite. A man who claims to be one of Israel's leading intellectuals is also a Swedish anti-Semitic writer. Israel Shamir presents himself on his website as a leading Russian-Israeli intellectual and a writer, translator, and journalist. But in 2001, he changed his name to Joran Jermas and has surrounded himself in Sweden and Norway with anti-Semites and strange conspiracy theorists. Among those, by the way, skipping down, Joran's translator in Norway is Hans Olaf Brenberg, a teacher who was recently asked to lead the executive committee of the RV Alliance. Brenberg stirred up controversy after writing articles for the left-wing Klassekampen in which he charged the Jews with killing Christ and hating all non-Jews. And this particular individual, again, Brenberg, the Norwegian translator for Shamir, is, again, a doctrinaire anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist. Basically, the world Jewish conspiracy theory is one of his major stocks in trade. More about the associates of Joran Jermas in Scandinavia. Shamir slash Jermas has found other, even more extreme friends in Sweden. One of his Swedish translators, Lars Adelskog, is not only a leading figure in the Swedish UFO movement, but can also be found in the jungle of conspiracy theories where the Illuminati, the Freemasons, and the lizards in human form are supposedly working together to end civilization as we know it. Adelskog's last book bore the profound title, An Empty Bag Cannot Stand, and was published by the openly Nazi publisher Nordiska Forlagat. This organization also sells books by MacDonald, Hitler, and Irving. In his latest book, Adelskog tries in typical Nazi style to prove that the Nazi genocide of the Jews never took place, skipping down. Another outlet that eagerly promotes anti-Semitic conspiracy theories is the Russian magazine Zavtra and its editor Alexander Prokhorov. While in Moscow, Jermas worked as a journalist for Zavtra, which has been described as Russia's most anti-Semitic rag. When the notorious racist and former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke went to Russia to promote his new book, Jewish Supremacism, and his National Association for the Advancement of White People, it was at Prokhorov's invitation. So these are the people who are the sources for the Joran Jermas, part of that milieu, is the source for the alleged CIA manipulation of the people who are charging Julian Assange with rape. But it's more than just the fact that they are the sources for it. It turns out that Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, and his son are employees of WikiLeaks, and beyond that, they are in charge of WikiLeaks' dissemination of information in Scandinavia and Russia. A number of sites have talked about this. There's going to be a Guardian article that I'm going to talk about later, but from the Little Green Footballs website, WikiLeaks' Russian representative, a Holocaust denier. One of the craziest weirdos Little Green Footballs has been following for years is a guy named Israel Shamir, a Russian-born bark-at-the-moon anti-Semite and Holocaust denier who used to write for the Saudi English-language journal Arab News. And again, he's basically handling WikiLeaks operations for Russia. It's not just that Israel Shamir, a.k.a. Joran Jermas, is the source for trying to discredit Assange's critics or accusers. He's actually an employee, as is his son, who is of a similar political stripe. And this is from Reason magazine. It's a libertarian publication. This is the more detailed account. There's also a similar account in The Guardian. This is from December 14th. The Swedish media has identified Shamir's son, a disgraced journalist named Johannes Wallström, himself accused of anti-Semitism and falsifying quotes, as a WikiLeaks spokesman in Sweden. Indeed, Wallström has authored stories based on the WikiLeaks material for the newspaper Aftonbladet and is credited as a producer on a recent Swedish public television documentary about the book. And as the article goes on to explain or illustrate, he's basically cut from the same political fabric as his father. So basically, one is left with two choices here. Basically, at the epicenter of the pirate vortex, again, anarcho-utopian, not fascist by any means, is basically a Swedish Nazi financier, Carl Lundstrom. And we find its Swedish and Russian operations in many ways being handled by a couple of people who are part and parcel to the Swedish Nazi milieu. Now, either there is a relationship between those two situations or it's coincidental, and I doubt that it's coincidental. Returning once again to the goal, take over all piracy, note that the Nordic Publishers is the basically has published the material for Israel Shamir or Joran Jermas' Swedish publisher, the Nordiska Forlaget. And turning once again to the goal, take over all piracy, Lundstrom has made no secret of his sympathy for xenophobic groups, and last year his name was on the customer list of the Nazi publishing house Nordic Publishers, or Nordiska Forlaget. So it would appear, certainly, that Joran Jermas is from exactly the same Swedish Nazi-slash-fascist milieu as Carl Lundstrom. This program exemplifies why people should use the SpitfireList.com website. Not only previous broadcasts, which contain information essential for understanding more recently produced programs, but also there's a vast amount of archived information, in particular the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and related titles in the book section. In listening to this broadcast without having read the Martin Bormann book, my guess is that an awful lot of this would appear ridiculous or at least incomprehensible. Please use the SpitfireList.com website. It's essential. It's essential for understanding these programs. And if you don't like what you're hearing, there's a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing, and there's no better way of fighting back if you don't like what's going on than supporting the work that I'm doing. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 732, Dead Man's Chest, Wiki-Fascism and the Attack of the Cyber Wandervogel. This program is being recorded on January 9th of the year 2011. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.